Our last panel of the day, what I've done is put together an amalgamation of people who use different travel techniques, some who've used them for decades, some who are using them for have been using them for a very short time. And the idea here is to discuss dog guides, guide dogs, and canes. And I was very specific. I don't want this to be formulated as a guide dog versus cane discussion. I think sometimes people take those two as sort of opposite ends of the spectrum. They're not really. They take the same basic orientation, and I've used both, so I know. There are some advantages and disadvantages to both. So I'm going to ask each member of the panel to tell us a little bit about their travel technique, how long they've been using it, and why they prefer it. And then what I'd like very much to do is take questions and comments from the audience. So this one will end up being interactive. You guys can go in any order you want. If you haven't specified, we'll take them in the order that I took them on the agenda. Dale Schweck?
Okay.
You want the podium? It's on your
sure.
Way.
Well, in January of this year, I went to Guiding Eyes for the Blind in Yorktown Heights, New York, and I got my first guide dog. She's at the IEBS table, our mascot in the back of the room, Iman, being a good girl, hopefully. And prior to having her, I was a cane user. And prior to being a cane user, I went without a cane. As a lot of us, you know, pretend to play sighted for, you know, as long as we can. But what I noticed, there are definite advantages and disadvantages. And an important point that Patty mentioned that I hope to drive home, especially to people who are thinking of getting guide dogs, is orientation is key. Knowing where your body is in space and understanding how you relate to the areas around you. If you have a dog or a cane and you don't understand your orientation, neither tool is going to be useful. That's what I've found. I've found that my orientation was key because I still have to tell that dog where to go. She may get patterned to a route. For example, I can walk out of my house door in the morning, and if it's a Monday morning, if I head towards the bus stop, she has an idea that that's where I'm going. But I have to know where I'm going. I have to have that orientation to tell her, okay, Iman, right, because right out the door is towards the corner where I catch the bus. If I didn't tell her that, she wouldn't head that way on her own. There's a lot of care that goes into having a dog, a lot like having you have this dog with you everywhere you go. In many cases, this dog, you have to have food and make sure you have pickup bags. Some people I've heard people compare it to having a small child with you all the time. You're always taking care of this other creature. This other living being that also takes care of you. There's a camaraderie and a companionship between a successful guide dog team. And the rule of thumb that you usually hear with guide dogs is that solid guide dog teams are built anywhere from 6 months to 1 year of being together. Prior to that, you're getting to know each other. It's a major getting to know you game. The dog is new to you. You are new to the dog. And for me, it was my first dog, and it was a completely new experience. But it's an experience that, personally, I wouldn't trade for the world. And I like to consider myself a hybrid. I still have a cane. I still use a cane. There are situations where a cane is preferable to a dog. I'm a bowler. I bowl a lot, 3 to 4 times a week. And sometimes I'll take her to the bowling alley with me, but sometimes if it's extra crowded and there's a lot of people around, since I'm not going to have her on the lane with me, I leave her at home and I take my cane. It's knowing when to use one particular mode of travel over another, and that's my feelings.
Okay. Well, after... Who's next? We did Dale. We are going to hear from Debbie Pittman.
Okay, am I on?
Did we get you a mic, Debbie?
Yeah, I have a mic. Is it on?
Yes, you're good.
Okay, hello, everyone. I would just start out by saying I am a dog user and a cane user and a crutches user. And I have to say that using a dog gives cues that you don't get with a cane. For example, I can tell my dog find a door, or when we go to an elevator, I can tell him find the buttons. Or when we go to Dunkin' Donuts or Walgreens or Staples, I can say, go to Dunkin' Donuts, and he goes there. Or go to Staples, and he goes there. So I love it. And as Dale said, you have to take care of your partner, because that's what your animal is. He's a partner to you, and he takes care, your partner would take care of you. Being on crutches, using a service animal is much easier for me, because then I don't have to worry about trying to look where I'm going. And trying to use a cane when on crutches doesn't work very well together. And also, as Dale said, there are times when you have to use a cane. And in those instances, you use the cane, and I must say that when I'm using my cane, I do miss my partner, because I miss those things that he lets me know about. But at the same time, with the cane, you get to find the landmarks that you miss when you're using a service animal. So, as also Dale said, that you have to be oriented to where you are. You have to know where you're going. Yes, you must. Because if you don't know where you're going, you can't get there. And your service animal is only going to be able to follow the instructions that you're giving that animal. For sometimes I'm using a service animal, the one thing that cane users have to do, which is not always easy, is they teach you to trust your dog. And that means if your dog is letting you know something, if it's stopping and you can't get that dog to go forward, there's something wrong. That dog is letting you know by not moving forward that there's something wrong. So you have to trust your animal enough to say, okay, I need to stop and see what's going on, because he's telling me something. Travel is very important. And be it a cane or a service animal, as long as it helps you to maintain the level of independence that you need to be able to accomplish your goals, that's the most important thing. And I think that's it.
Debbie Stein, are you ready? Is Debbie here? No, we're missing Debbie. Okay, then I am going to take Debbie's spot, because what I was looking for with Debbie is someone who'd used both the dog and a cane and now uses a cane, and I suppose that I qualify just as readily. I used the dog through high school and through, well, the end of high school, all of college, and part of law school. Many of you actually remember Sandy, and I would say a couple things about dogs that haven't quite been said yet. Dogs get sick, and I truly believe that even though legally we can take dogs into any public places that we choose, I never took mine, for example, to a venue like a bar that was going to be really crowded. And I didn't take mine generally into hospitals, although I know some do. All of those are personal choices, but you do need to think about it. The dog needs to be groomed. Many dogs need to be groomed at least twice a day. They take time. They take money. You've got to be able to pay the vet bills or the food bills. Now, they don't take as much money as my teenage children do, but they take money. Teenage children are money-eating machines. Ask Julia. She'll be glad to tell you, as long as it keeps coming. I think that the way of thought in using a dog is vastly different. Yes, you have to stay oriented, but when I used a dog, I could think in bigger chunks, meaning that I could think about the next turn or the next block. When I'm using a cane, I'm looking for the next cue as to where I am in the block, or the cue that lets me know I'm too far past the corner or coming up to it. So it seems to me that even though it's all in the back of my mind, the thought process is probably more demanding, if you will, with I'm using a cane, than it is with the dog. And I think that's probably what I would add to the discussion so far. So let's go to Chris. Are you up here? Boy, am I missing half this panel? Somebody, I don't have someone who can sub for Chris. Somebody go get Chris. I think he's in kid camp. Please. Thank you. Chris Jekyll I'm looking for. Hang on, I'm going to actually put Steve on instead. Steve's up here, so Steve, you go ahead, and then we'll come and see what Gregory's looking for.
I had an experience maybe 8 to 10 months ago working with a blind lady in another state who used a dog and also used a cane. We did cane travel instruction, and I showed her these crazy ramp curbs where the ramp comes down and gives you an alignment 45 degrees to the intersection. And she didn't really understand that until we started doing some fairly intensive cane travel. And then once I showed it to her, the accuracy of her street crossings increased markedly. And then when she used the dog, the accuracy of her street crossings with her guide dog increased also, because she could give the dog better direction. And then when she used her cane, the accuracy of her street crossings improved, because I reminded her, you know, think of those good street crossings you made with your dog, and just, you know, cross the street so that it feels the same way for you intuitively. So the orientation skills are completely important. You want to know your north, south, east, and west. You want to know your street names. You want to know your transit stuff, whatever you're riding on. And I would like to hear my colleagues on this panel talk to us about, because I've heard different things, what is sort of the best practice among guide dog trainers and users regarding things like escalators and revolving doors, and also maybe we could talk some about rural travel where there are no sidewalks. I've done pretty much all of that stuff with a cane. I started using a cane in 1964, and the only experience I've had with a dog directly is that a couple friends of mine have let me try their guide dogs a little bit, but I've never used one for real. Anyway, those are my comments. Thanks.
Some of those comments go to our final speaker. I did ask Roland Allen. I could not take advantage of the fact that we have a travel instructor with us. I'm sure that Roland, given where he works, has done some rural travel. Roland, would you like to tell us a little bit about what you do and then answer some of Steve's questions?
Hello, everybody. My name is Roland Allen, and I am a cane travel instructor at the Louisiana Center for the Blind. You know, I'm really glad that this is not a discussion about a cane versus a dog, because, in my opinion, both methods are excellent. I would say as long as the blind person is out there traveling, it doesn't matter if you're using a dog or using a cane. I've met people who use both. I've met some really good dog users and some really good cane users. But I've also met some people who aren't good dog users, are not good cane users. Mm-hmm. I believe that when a person has the training, that makes using either one of those methods much easier. A lot of people go into getting a dog and they say to themselves, well, you know, they could have really poor travel skills and they say to themselves, well, when I get this dog, everything's going to be fine. I won't get lost anymore. That's not the truth. In fact, what will happen is they'll still get lost, but they'll get lost twice as fast.
Yeah.
There you go. And I've met people who say, all I need is a cane. I'm going to go over to the NFB table and purchase a cane, and that's going to be the answer to all of my problems. And they're still getting lost in a closet. So I'd say the answer is get some good training. Get some training, regardless of where you go. Obviously, we have three excellent training centers, both in Colorado, Louisiana, and Minnesota. So I would encourage people to go out and get good training first. And if you still want to go and get a dog, I would strongly encourage you to do so. I personally use a cane because, honestly, that's the first thing I was introduced to. I think that if coming out of high school, somebody said to me, Roland, here, you know, there's this really good school, you know, Seeing Eye, Guiding Eyes, Guide Dogs to the Blind, whichever school, I'd probably be going that route. But I was introduced to a cane first. And I'll tell you, when I was first given a cane, it was scary. My mobility instructor was a blind guy. I wasn't feeling too happy about that because the first thought I had was, who's going to watch out for me and for you? We're both blind. I mean, who's going to watch out for us? So that was kind of scary to me. So when I was given this cane, I had this travel instructor. His name was Luis Lucero. He pushed me really hard. He pushed me. He challenged me. He pushed me out of my comfort zone. And that's what I needed. I needed somebody to believe in me and push me and say to me, I believe in you as a blind person. And I know that once you've traveled and gained some confidence, you can travel anywhere. And so because he gave me appropriate routes, because he put me in situations where I was traveling in places that I had never been before, that's what really gave me the confidence. He pushed me out there, put me out there in those situations where I had sidewalks. Sometimes I didn't have sidewalks. I was walking down streets that didn't have sidewalks, that was along busy, busy streets, quiet residential areas. And I'll tell you what, because he taught me how to really focus and pay attention to my surroundings, that really helped me to learn to travel in those situations. So I believe that because he really taught me the importance of staying focused when I'm out there on travel, I believe that that's why today I can travel anywhere, regardless of how much traffic there is, if there's a sidewalk, because I'm focused on the traffic, I'm focused on the curb and if it's turning or not, I'm focused on if there's any seams that come up, meaning where the street and the driveway meet. So it really doesn't matter because I've had the experience, but most of all, the important thing is I have the confidence. And I think that I've seen a lot of people who don't travel because they don't have the confidence. And why don't they have confidence? And working with a lot of people at the center in Louisiana, I believe that people don't have confidence because they're worried about three things. One thing they're worried about is falling down and hurting themselves. That's a really common one. A lot of people are afraid of that. Another one is they're afraid of getting into the street and getting hit by a car. Realistic goal. I mean, not a goal, but concern, I should say. Not a goal, it's a goal. Realistic concern if you don't have the training and if you don't have the confidence. Another one is they're afraid of getting lost. I always tell people, you learn the absolute most when you get lost.
Amen.
That's how you develop those really strong problem-solving skills, by getting lost. So I always tell my students, don't look at those times when you don't know where you are as getting lost. Look at them as problem-solving opportunities, because you have opportunity to develop those strong problem-solving skills, and the more you develop those strong problem-solving skills, then you can take those problem-solving skills anywhere and apply them regardless of where you are, be it California, be it here in Illinois, China, it doesn't matter. You can go anywhere and use those skills and you'll be just fine. So I would strongly encourage anybody who isn't currently traveling independently to first of all get some training. Get some training, gain the confidence, go to a good training center where you'll be pushed, you'll have high expectations placed on you, you'll be expected to do things that you're not comfortable doing, you may be afraid to do. But I would encourage you to go and get some good training, and after you get that training, if you still want to go get a dog, so be it. Go for it. Thank you.
Thank you, Roland. I want to plug a new product that our Independence Market sells. I have some with me, not for sale because they're mine, but we are selling now a new collapsible cane that is really, really nice. It breaks into 7 sections. It will fit in a purse or a big pocket. It is much sturdier than the telescoping canes. I caught mine in a revolving door the other day, and it didn't snap off. The tip gives you, in my mind, almost as good an echo as a stray cane does. Not quite, but it's a lot better echo than we've had before. I think they're carbon fiber, but they're not cheap. They are $40 a piece, but believe me, I think they're worth it. Pam has one. We're going to, you know, the only problem is that we're all going to mix them up now, especially Denise and I. We carry the same length, 59 inches. Okay. Did Debbie Stein make it in here?
No.
No. All right. Then we are going to take some questions and comments from the floor in terms of questions, comments, canes, dog guides.
Pittman.
Okay. I heard Pittman first, then I heard Meyer. Debbie,
okay.
Pittman?
I wanted to answer a couple of Steve's questions that were left out. He asked about revolving doors with the guide dog. Well, it depends on the size of the dog, for one thing. But, yes, you can go through a guide revolving door with a guide dog. You do have to do it very carefully and slowly. But you don't try it when you're on crutches. Not good. Escalators, they tell you that you really shouldn't do escalators, but I did teach my first dog to do escalators. I taught him to jump on and jump off the escalator because it was sometimes too difficult to, or I didn't have enough time to be going to go find the stairs that were way at the other end of the L. So it's workable. It is workable, but they don't necessarily advise you to do escalators.
I think that's also school dependent. Leader dog, for example, was that Roland?
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead. Or that's Dale, sorry. Take a mic, any mic.
Got one. Here it is. My school, Guiding Eyes, they do teach escalators and they do teach revolving doors. Now, the thing with escalators and revolving doors is I've been able to avoid revolving doors ever since I've had this dog. And even being in places where they are. Why? Because federal law states that there must be a fixed door within range of a revolving door, meaning that you do not have to use that revolving door, as well with escalators. In a place where there is an escalator, there must also be, within some reasonable distance, an elevator and or a staircase that can be used. Does this always happen in every single building we're going to run into? Of course not. But that's why you learn the techniques. Guiding Eyes have taught me a technique for escalators. And just to basically simplify it for people who are non-dog users, the individual myself would go ahead of the dog. I would mount myself on the escalator, tell her, "Hep up, let's go." And she comes in behind me, would always stay behind me for the entirety of the trip. I step off first, and she follows off behind me. It's as safe as you can possibly do it. Is there a possibility they can still get their toe hairs or dew claws caught in the escalator? There absolutely is. And that's why I personally, my recommendation is if you can find alternate net methods to do so, but the techniques do exist. And country travel was mentioned. You were talking about rural travel. In my class, a very good friend of mine that I met there lives in the Catskills, and she got her dog to travel solely country travel. Now, different schools have different methods of teaching rural travel. My school teaches a method not unsimilar to the way that some people choose to travel with a cane, which is shorelining on the left side of the road. You're on the shoulder with the traffic coming towards you. That's the safest place for you to be. The dog is on the left. They're keeping you shorelined. You check their shorelining using a technique that the school teaches you however often you feel that it needs to be done. And the more you work with the dog, and especially in a specific area, their shorelining will become pretty spot on. And I find that they will follow. My dog was able to do it in snow. I trained with her in January in New York in the dead of winter, and we were traveling all around in areas. It reminded me of old World War II footage. I saw Bastogne all cold and snowed over. You couldn't even see the ground underneath your feet, but these dogs were able to pick up on that, something a cane has a real problem doing in the snow. So that's definitely has its positives and its negatives. But as for country travel, it's not only feasible, it's very enjoyable. The dogs love it, and Diane is having a fantastic time in the Catskills with her dog.
And I will take a few more questions.
Okay.
Bill, you're looking for a mic?
We have Dave Meyer.
Dave, and I forgot to go back to Greg. Dave, get Dave a mic, will you?
Yes, Greg Rosenberg, and this time I'll identify myself with Tinley Park Emergency Management Agency. And basically, I just had a comment I wanted to share because my background is emergency preparedness. If you do have an emergency situation and you have to go to a shelter, all shelters are required by law to allow you to enter with a guide dog, first off. Secondly, it's important to consider the supplies you might need for your dog for that period aftermath of some event, be it 72 hours or a week. You need to consider making sure you have papers. You need to consider making sure you have food and whatever else the dog might need. But that's kind of my comment. But I also have a question. I faced a couple of challenges in the last week or two using my cane, and one of them is that I have a bad habit of veering. And the second question is, I also do a lot of thinking and planning in my head, so sometimes I'm thinking and planning and forgetting what direction I'm walking in. And so I'm wondering if I should consider investing in a compass or what people are doing to deal with that type of issue.
Can you take that one?
So you said you're having a lot of problems with veering?
Yep.
Okay. Matt, pardon this question, but have you had training?
I've only had a couple of small sessions back in 2004. There were indoor sessions, and I just had a couple of small sessions with a gal who's a retired O&M on teaching me how to
I had a couple of sessions back in 2004 when I initially lost my vision completely for a period of 5 weeks. And in the recent week or so, I was lucky enough to have some short amount of training crossing 80th Avenue to the train station with Sandy. And, you know, she's an incredible instructor, but, you know, she's more or less retired, so, you know, she can't necessarily commit as much time as I might need.
You know,
but, you know, I actually veered literally in the middle of the street and kept walking down the street, and she let me do it because she wanted to see if I was going to correct or not. But I've caught myself many times when I'm totally sightless, and it's a newer concept to me. This is a newer concept since January, really, where it's been a more frequent occurrence, like 3 days out of the week. So it's maybe it's just taking some getting used to. I don't know.
You know, I could sit here and give you several different scenarios on why you may be veering, but I'm going to go back to what I was saying earlier. I think that the way to gain confidence in the techniques and the skills and in yourself as a blind traveler, the training is really important. So I would strongly encourage you to even talk to Steve here, maybe about giving you some travel, or, you know, seeing Pam here before we leave and possibly looking to come in and getting some training. But in the meantime, if you want to talk about some specifics, I'll be happy to talk about that one-on-one. But one quick thing I'd say is, when you're crossing a street, make sure that you keep your hand centered, walk fast, and look straight ahead. I think that the speed helps you to not veer as much. And it's amazing how keeping your hand centered will help you to walk straighter lines. As far as directions, that takes time to develop that skill. I would say first try to learn to use cardinal directions and learn how to mental map, once going back to training, before you go into getting a compass or some other device to help you with that. And then once you gain some confidence and gain the skills, then I'd say, hey, go for it. Buy a compass or buy whatever device you'd like to buy.
Jamal?
Yes. I'll make my comments brief. First of all, to my colleagues who are guide dog users, I find that even though a lot of people tend to notice the dog more, I still am finding that there's still a lot of misconception about what guide dogs can do and what type of dogs could be guide dogs.
We don't have the poodle here this year, but right. We do have someone who uses a poodle in our affiliate.
Right.
You have a poodle, don't you, Edwin?
Right.
I was thinking of Bill Isaacs, but okay.
And I remember one time being approached at a bus stop, and the person was like, "We got a dog at giveaway. You could use a service dog." And I told the person, "Why? Thank you for your concern. Guide dogs, not any old street dog can be a guide dog. They got to be properly trained." and now have you folks who are guide dog users dealt with the misconceptions? And comment number two. I've been a cane user since I was 12 years old, and I consider myself pretty polished, but there have been times where I find myself getting out of kilter and not using correct technique, and I constantly sometimes have to correct myself and think to myself, wait a minute, what am I doing? I know better than that.
I've asked Dale to take that, and I've told him to please be brief. So, Dale?
Yes, right here.
Oh, thought you were going to take that question. I got it. Sorry. Here he goes. How do you deal with people's misconceptions with regard to what your dog can and can't do?
I've found that most of the people that I've run into on a day-to-day basis don't understand what the dog is there for. They either think it's just a companion, a compadre, someone to kind of hang around with me because I have no friends, because I'm blind. I've had people tell me, it must be great to have a dog, have a companion, have someone to care for you. It's like, are you for real? You deal with them with as much dignity and aplomb as you can, but we all have bad days, and I'm a very choleric person. So I deal with it with the idea of the golden rule: do unto others as you would have them do unto you. I be as nice and decent and human as possible with people, and I try to educate when I can. But if I'm on my way to work or I'm in the middle of the street, I'm not going to stop and talk to somebody about my Labrador. I've found it's not really healthy, and my insurance company isn't going to be really too keen to pay if they found that I was talking to somebody about my dog when I got hit by the 505. You know, it just don't work that way. So misconceptions, deal with them the best that you can, but don't allow people to hold you up, get in your way, or at all inconvenience you. Never let somebody grab the harness. I've heard stories where people in stores will grab the dog harness and be like, ah, okay, you know, I'll help you out. Here we go. And, you know, you're trying to hold the harness, and the dog's looking at you like, this is completely out of character. I have no clue what's going on here.
All right, I'm going to let Roland have – yeah, that wasn't quite as brief as I had in mind, Dale, but thank you. Roland, you got the last word on this panel.
Well, I just want to wrap up by saying, once again, it doesn't matter what your mode of travel is as long as you get out there and travel. Don't let fear hold you back. We want everybody to be out there living their lives, going out there and going to work, going to school. So we want people to get out there and travel. So get out there and get some good training and go out and live your life.
Let's give them a hand. This has been a very informative panel. Thank you.